Hello and welcome back to the third and final episode in our neonatal mini-series, Is Sunscreen Use Safe in Children Under the Age of 6 Months? You've already heard from Dr. Irene Lara Corrales and Dr. Jeanette Jacus on the pros and cons of sunscreen use in young infants. Before we begin, it's important to note the views and information expressed during this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the Pediatric Dermatology Research Alliance. The purpose of this podcast is to be thought-provoking and to stimulate new ideas, new collaborations, and novel research. Any reference to medical treatment or disease management is for this purpose only. It is not an endorsement by PEDRA, and it is not suitable for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Any decisions related to medical care should be made in consultation with qualified healthcare providers. And now I'll turn it over to Dr. Shook.
Okay, so now tonight we have Dr. Lara Corrales and Dr. Jacus, who together we're going to discuss the pros and cons of sunscreen use in infants, as well as some significant research gaps and implications for clinical practice. The first thing I wanted to talk to as a group about is what are the next steps? What do we need to know before we can make a better recommendation on sunscreen use in infants?
I think one of the things that we have failed to at least say out loud is that UV radiation is the most important known modifiable risk factor for the development of skin cancer long term. So this is something that we can control. So I think as physicians, we do know that we need to act and we need to make recommendations about this, because we also know that if you have a sunburn early in life, especially for little babies that have lighter skin tones, this predisposes them to cancer long term. So we do want them protected from the sun. And the other thing that I also think we should mention is that the FDA does recognize that there are products that are safe to use. And there's no information in the first 6 months of life, but at least some of those that have been termed GRACE, the generally recognized as safe and effective, are both titanium dioxide and zinc oxide. So those mineral sunscreens, like, I feel comfortable recommending to use those products. I use them on my kids. So I think we do need more information about other types of sunscreens, but I think right now, I don't know what you feel, but I'm comfortable giving that advice.
Right. Like a good first step would be working towards making a consensus recommendation for mineral sunscreen use in infants and then exploring safety there. Do either of you feel comfortable discussing a little bit here for the listeners the difference between chemical and physical sunscreens?
Sure. I mean, as I think we all recognize, there are essentially two categories of sunscreen that are available over the counter. And those are what we call physical blockers or inorganic sunscreens. And then there's the organic or non-physical or chemical blockers. So ingredients in our physical blockers are things like titanium oxide, zinc oxide, and more recently, iron oxide is being used. Those work by sitting on the skin surface and reflecting the light or the UV UV radiation, and thereby avoiding UV exposure to the skin cells. Chemical sunscreens, things like avobenzone, oxybenzone, they work a little bit differently. So they do penetrate the skin a little bit more than zinc and titanium, and they essentially absorb the light and then scatter it, so that you don't get the UV penetrating deeper into the skin cells. And that's the basic difference between those two forms of sunscreen.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you. I think it's something I don't think really parents and consumers understand. So I know a lot of times I hear that people are like, oh, I don't want to mess with the sunscreens that are white to put on my babies, because then you put the white sunscreen on and then it's all over the stroller, it's all over the car. So I think just understanding why we're recommending the physical sunscreens can be helpful, because practically speaking, they are the messier ones, but that there's certainly a reason for that, because they're just sitting on top of the skin and blocking the sun. So thank you for that background, Dr. Jacobs. Okay, so if we were to think about how to get safety data, what would be the next best step for getting safety data to better understand this issue? Because I agree with both of you that if we could just have a little bit of safety data, it would make our patients or our parents feel a lot better.
Well, the classic way of obtaining safety data is to run clinical trials, right, which can be very costly and also very difficult to do in that age group. A lot of people don't want to participate in what are considered experimental research with their young infants. I think that most of the safety data that we should be able to obtain may come from, again, use of zinc oxide and other products that's already being done in infants. And I think there could be a good argument made for that. I think you should be able to translate that information to sunscreen use if you really just break it down by ingredient. And also, as was mentioned, it's considered a safe ingredient. It's a GRACE ingredient. So FDA has already determined that that zinc oxide is a safe ingredient to be used in over-the-counter products.
Yeah, that makes me think of another good point. So we always say we need more data. And in fact, I know this comes up in everyday life. This came up when we were considering vaccinating my children. And I think it's pretty common to say we need more data. But then also when you think about not only the logistics and the cost, do we really need more data? Actually, we started this conversation with we need more data. But then when you say it that way, it's like, gosh, is that really worth the cost and the effort? And even if we just said, okay, all of the babies that are having a zinc oxide diaper paste, we can just take blood levels to test how much zinc oxide in the blood. Even that is interesting to think about, because we think it's safe, and so we're then subtracting all of those babies to blood draws that in our heart we think might be unnecessary.
I agree with you. I think that some of these things, like, we have to kind of almost put in a balance the potential risks with the potential benefits. And in my balance, the risk of protecting from the sun is going to outweigh any potential risk. So it is, it would be very nice to have data in kids, especially because over the last few years, we have been seeing some manuscripts being published that bring some of these kind of points that some of these chemicals, sunscreens, are absorbed, and that they might mess up with the endocrine system, and things that we still don't have real kind of, like, we don't know if that is completely true. But those were done in age groups that are not our small pediatric patients. So, again, like, putting little babies through pokes and through all this research, like, do we really want to do that? I have mixed feelings about that.
Yeah.
And actually, yeah, I heard... Sorry.
No, please go ahead.
I heard what is likely a rumor that the FDA didn't test zinc and titanium-based sunscreens when they funded that testing on the chemical sunscreens, because the zinc and titanium are considered safe ingredients. So I think that also says a lot with regards to the use of those ingredients in kids. I think the recommendation should maybe be limited to using mineral sunscreens or physical blockers until we have more information about chemical sunscreens. We know that they penetrate. There was that study that was funded by the FDA. And I think that scared a lot of people. And we get, you know, also cause a lot of, you know, questioning and other, speculation about, you know, what is considered safe and what is not. But that has not held true for mineral sunscreens as far as we know.
That definitely raised a lot of questions in my practice. Like parents, like this made it not only to our medical journals, but also made it to parent magazines and newspapers and news, like it was all over. So many of those opposing the use of sunscreen were really grabbing on disinformation to question sunscreens and to build more controversy about the use of sunscreen and all the good that sunscreen does. And yes, they proved that there was some absorption, but what does that mean? I don't think we know.
Right. Yeah, and then that's a great question too. If we did clinical trials on sunscreen in infants to show safety, I don't know if we can really show safety, to show probably be more of, oh, these are the levels in the blood, there's minimal absorption into the blood. But then are we comfortable, and I am, just to be clear, but are we comfortable if that's like a 6-month follow-up study? Do we need like a 3-year follow-up study to make sure there aren't any endocrine disruptors, like Dr. Laura Corrales mentioned? I mean, it's kind of hard to know where to draw the line, and we tend as a society to be a bit risk averse. And so we kind of have to put into perspective of, yes, we could do studies forever on all of the ingredients and follow up for 10 years on each child. But really, at some point, you have to say, you know, maybe it's not worth all of the time and effort. So that's a great. So then what do we do with all this? Like if we had, let's say that we had a big PDRA grant right now, and we were going to design a study to investigate this, what would we do next?
One of the questions I think needs to be answered before we do anything is, what are the practices for sun protection or sun avoidance already existing in that age group or in that population? And then extrapolate from there, and then build a cause, right? Like, I think right now we need to get more information on the number of, you know, sunburns, the type of sun exposure that's happening in that age group. And I know there's definitely like geographic differences, there's seasonal differences, but even to kind of capture that type of information, I think is an important starting point. And once we have that information, I think we can better cater our recommendations to how to properly avoid, you know, sunburns and other extreme UV exposure in that age group.
Yeah, that's a great thought. What do you think, Dr. Laracross? What's that?
I feel a little bit different regarding that, just because I find it takes a long time to gather all this information. And by the time that we determine like all the practices and the number of sunburns and everything, we might be losing valuable time, especially for some of these babies growing up very fast. So I think it is important information to gather, but I think at the same time, we should be coming up with some guidance, especially I feel that right now the mineral sunscreens are considered safe. So why not go ahead and make that as a guideline to what we think needs to be happening and try to have like a little bit of more uniform language through all the different recommendations that we have in AAP and AAD and like our society, SPD, like everywhere, like to try to prioritize that we need to protect our babies from the sun.
So I think if we had a $50,000 PDRA grant, Dr. Jacobs would start with a behavioral study, understanding what's going on currently. And Dr. Laura Corrales would start with a consensus meeting of the experts to make some new guidelines. So I'm going to throw my hat in the ring. I like both of those decisions. But the other thing I was just thinking of while we were talking, I think one thing we could do would be to, we have obviously children in the hospital who are using zinc oxide paste already. We could potentially look at discarded blood samples to see how much of that's, if any, is detected in blood.
I think that's a great idea.
And would that be enough reassurance to jump to the next step of, okay, so we have 50, 100, 200 babies in the hospital using zinc oxide paste, minimal amounts detected in the blood. Would that be enough to jump to those consensus statements?
I think that's fine, but the problem is, what if that's not what the research shows? And what if you find that there are elevated zinc levels? And then, you know, and then again, it's this, you're in the same place that we're at now with the chemical sunscreens, is what does it mean?
Right. Well, and the fifth is that zinc is necessary in the body, right? So compared to some of the foreign molecules, chemical sunscreen, zinc is an essential mineral?
It is, and especially for skin health, right? We all know that. It is something that I think is difficult to measure. I think you need special assays to do that and special collection tubes. So I'm not sure that discarded blood samples would necessarily work for that. But, you know, there are workarounds for that.
Can I ask you, zinc, both zinc oxide and titanium dioxide are very big molecules. Like, my understanding is that they are not, we're not able to absorb them through the skin. Or, I've never seen any research specific to that, but is that some, I think that would be a first question.
No, I think that's a great question. I saw you were making kind of a face there. I was wondering what you were thinking. No, I think you're right. I don't know what studies have been done. It's just that we started the conversation with saying we don't really have the data. And so it would just be nice to say, okay, we looked at the blood and we didn't see any of those molecules there. Because I don't know that that's been done specifically in the infant population, but it's probably doable. I don't know what kind of special assays would need to be done to tease that out from, you can't just from a normal zinc study. That's obviously something different. So we definitely would have to tease that out. But you're right. We might not even answer that question if we're not looking at it right, or we might find that it's negative, and then it comes back to the same thing, okay, even if there's some there, is that dangerous? Probably not. I mean, if that was my infant and there was some zinc oxide particles floating around that did get past that barrier, it's probably okay, and we don't really know safe amounts. So again, it's this is how research come and goes, right? You come up with ideas, and then this happens to me all the time. And then you work through the idea, and then you're like, oh, maybe it's not that good of an idea. So I could go either way on that. It might be reassuring for some. It might be a waste of time for others.
Brilliant. And there is a lot of data out there, actually, regarding penetration of zinc into the skin.
Right.
And to my knowledge, it does not go past the striatum corneum. So then you start asking about nanoparticles, and then you can, ask about neonatal skin, which is different than adult skin. And I do not think it's been tested in neonatal skin. So, there's again, many different questions that can stem just from that one. To Jen's point, we do a lot of things that are not approved. And to my point earlier, I think if we want to make a statement that zinc oxide sunscreen is safe to use, there's no way that the FDA would allow that on a label without the studies being done.
Right.
But that doesn't stop us from recommending it based on our expertise in pediatric skin.
Yeah.
So there can be a balance there.
All right, Dr. Lara Curley's final thoughts on next steps and studies or consensus?
I was just going to add that, as Janet mentioned, some of this has been done in adults or older patients, but we probably haven't tested in newborn skin and preterm skin that, as we mentioned previously, this is skin that is not fully mature, so we might find different things. I think there's a lot. There are lots of things that we could do regarding this topic. I think our neonatal group is excited. Although we try to make this a little bit of a pros and cons, I think we all sit on the same boat, and we are really pro sun protection, and we really want to make sure that the education that our parents and our patients receive is based on reliable information that helps protect them long-term. So I think that We have lots of things to think about and bring to our group for further research.
Yeah, I agree. And I hope maybe we can get some industry energy involved in this as well, and maybe some industry funding to help this cause a little bit. So I'd like to end this discussion. One of the things that comes up a lot in clinic and how I practice, I always tell people this recommendation is what I would do if this was my child. Because I think that at the end of the day, especially being a pediatric dermatologist, a pediatric physician, that it colors everything I do, thinking about just the practicalities of everyday life, weighing the risks and benefits. So I think for me personally, again, my kids are a little older, they're 10 and 7, but if I had another little infant, and for all of the listeners, I'm in Florida, so sun is pretty much unavoidable because I can't not go to my older son's baseball games and things like that, or the swim meets. So if I had another little one right now, I'd feel very comfortable with sun protective clothing as much as possible, big hats, and then putting a pretty generous amount of a zinc oxide containing sunscreen, or even just plain old diaper paste on exposed areas. I don't mind, I don't love, but I don't mind the white mess of the physical sunscreens. Do you both mind just commenting on what you recommend to patients or what you would do in your own personal life?
I'm the same as you. I think it's very important to protect the skin in all ages, across all age groups, and that includes young infants, especially since they're more vulnerable to UV exposure. I think it becomes actually even more important to protect their skin as best as we can. And, I do personally feel comfortable with zinc oxide. Again, I think a lot of that stems from our use of this ingredient in other products. So I would recommend it to patients. Without any doubt. And I think that the recommendations as they stand right now do allow for that. So it makes me also comfortable recommending it, at least in limited areas. And then I live in New York, so I don't have that issue of ubiquitous sun exposure. But in the summer months, my recommendations are to protect, as you said, as much as you can physically, and then to add sunscreen to those areas that you can't protect.
Great. Dr. Lara Corrales?
I would echo many of the things you said. I would be like, I have 3 kids, and the older ones that I have to chase around, like, you have to use sunscreen. And with the little one that I have more control, like, he has a big hat, he has sun protective clothing, he wears sunscreen, like, that is what I advise for my patients as well. Like, I am also okay recommending mineral sunscreens in small babies, and as we mentioned before, I don't say sparingly ever when I'm mentioning sunscreen. I want them well protected, and sparingly doesn't protect. So sick shape, sun protective clothing, sunscreen, those are all things that my patients are going to hear from me.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. It reminds me, I actually sort of missed the infant days when I had control over the sunscreen going on the infant, even though it was a struggle, because now that they're a little bit older, it's definitely chasing them down or trying to go to their swim meets and swim practices without their sunscreen. So, well, this has been really informative. Oh, go ahead.
No, but my kids, my older ones are 18 and 22. So you lose control.
Yes, it just gets worse from here. I know. That's why I'm trying to ingrain those good habits. We have to start in the infant period now, I think. Any other final thoughts? This has been a really great discussion. I think we all have, similar opinions. And of course, it's a controversy because we don't have approval. But we definitely all think that sun protection is important. Any other final parting thoughts from either of you guys? I really appreciate your time and advice and insight today.
I think it has been great. Like, I enjoyed our conversation, and lots of work to do. Definitely, that is my biggest takeaway.
I agree. I think there's a long road ahead, but I think it can be done. And, I am pretty confident that we all kind of sit on the same side of the fence. So I think we can do it.
Right. Yeah, I think it says something. Pediatric dermatology is a pretty small field, but when we have similar thoughts about a topic, I think that definitely says something. All right. Well, I thank you both for your time tonight and for investigating, thinking about this topic a little bit so that we can do a little bit better for our patients. So I appreciate that. And on behalf of the PEDRA Neonatal Working Group, thank you for all you do, and let's keep up the good work.
A very special thank you to Dr. Jennifer Shook, Dr. Jeanette Jacobs, and Dr. Irene Lara Corrales for participating in this program. Thank you to our sponsors for supporting this program, AbbVie Inc., Eli Lilly and Company, Sanofi Genzyme, and Regeneron Pharmaceuticals. PEDRA is solely responsible for all program content and the selection of all presenters, authors, moderators, and faculty. Please subscribe to the PEDRA Pearls podcast channel and be sure to leave us a comment. Let us know how we're doing. You can find more educational content in the PEDRA app, available for Apple and Android users. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Thanks for listening.